Hello.
Malka.
Hi.
Hello.
You doing okay?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Just trying to get my daily work done at work, you know. It's been a booger lately.
No, I think we've all been through it.
How's everybody there? Feeling okay?
Well, Tony had a few little upsets this week, so I don't know.
Uh-oh.
And I had that procedure almost 2 weeks ago, and I still feel like I'm on fire. It's not the spine. Evidently, the procedure did well for that, but all the muscles and skin, I can't even bear to touch it. So I'm going to go ahead and call the doctor this morning and see if they'll send me some lidocaine patches. I'm tired.
Yeah. Well, did Tony's surgery issue cause him any?
I think what happened, because I couldn't tend to him, and he ate what he wanted to eat and got back in his old pattern, and it just upset his system. And so it took him a couple of days to get back. But it was a good lesson for him. I mean, now he's seeing he has to watch the fats and the dairy and things he didn't have to worry about before. But anyway, we decided we were not going to go tonight. So he's going to bring the rolls, because I was supposed to bring rolls. So I'll try to make it for a study, you know. But
I won't be able to go by the time. That 210 millimeter
wasn't Monday anyway. You know, when I always did it, and we had to do when the rabbi was in. Although it was actually to Bishvat, I think. I'm not sure. But anyway, it was always to me a teaching to the congregation, you know, mainly because they were used to it just being something for the children, you know, for the last 15 years. And, you know, but I mean, Monday's to Bishvat, so, you know, it's not like the energy is going to be there. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's a positive thing, but, and I know George worked real hard to put it together, because, you know, Tu B'Shvat is, it's a lot of work.
Is he still the president?
I'm sorry, what?
Is he still the president?
Yes.
George? Yes? I thought they were getting a new president. Okay.
Yes. We've hardly been since August, you know, because Tony's had so many issues.
Right.
And, but we do try to make it, I was trying not to expose him to anybody, because I knew his immune system was so low, and we were facing, you know, major surgeries and hoping that stent would hold till he had the next surgery. And so we really just went to Torah study when Rabbi was there, so... But anyway, I'm going to email and let him know he's going to down to the synagogue this morning to go ahead and bring the rolls that I was supposed to bring. And but I hope to talk to you sometime. So if you think you're going to ever be out this way, give me a call.
Well, I try not to go in that area, especially weekdays, because that 210 bridge is getting repaired. It's a nightmare traffic. So it's better to go on a Sunday or, you know, Saturday afternoon.
Well, that's even better. That's better for me. So,
are you having meetings at your house?
Not yet.
Okay.
Brandy and Judy and I met one time to discuss and plan. And then Judy came to stay with us while Tony was not feeling so good this week, because Lisa broke her arm, so she's not driving. And I was a little bit concerned not being able to get in the car and go to the emergency room if we had to with Tony. And so she came. So we did a little bit more planning into what we want to work on.
Okay.
So, and So whenever you come, I'll fill you in and get your opinion. And,
okay.
It's not a matter of what what to plan. It's the idea, you know, if we get together on a Sunday, we almost have to be together all day, you know, from 10 to 4.
Right. Which is fine.
So.
Good morning.
Oh, good,
good morning.
I hope we didn't keep you from coming off.
I'm sorry?
I said, I hope our conversation didn't keep you from, you know, coming in.
No, I was finishing a little bit of breakfast.
Okay. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and mute so I won't have any noise here.
Appreciate that. So we're
me
in,
too.
Understand. We are studying Psalm 51 today, and we will use the two handouts, the PDF as well as the Psalms landing page. We'll start with the Psalms landing page, and you will have a link to the PDF within that, if you want to use it that way. I think everyone should know by now that the Psalms landing page is on the Unique Astrological Times link in the section of Ta'anit Dibur, or Shovavim. Let's start with the L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud, Kutshabarichu, Ishkinte, Bitsi, Leverhimu, Uthilu, Uthilu, Urhimu, Leakta, L'shem Yehud, Bavate, Yehuda, Shalim, B'shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'asok Torah Mitzvah, Vayino Amadonai Elohim, Alena Maseya, Deno Kanane, Alena Maseya, Deno Kananehu. This psalm speaks of when Nathan the prophet went to David's palace and rebuked him for his sin with Bathsheba. David then secluded himself with Hashem, offering awe-inspiring prayers and begging forgiveness. Every person should recite this psalm for his sins and transgressions. And I am adding that, in my opinion, the psalm is good to say as part of the teshuvah process. The above kavanah is a traditional kavanah to use when saying this psalm. The first word is Lamnatzeach Mizmor, and please refer to the introduction in the Yearning for Redemption PDF for more information about the beginning words of the Psalms. There are 21 verses in Psalm 51. 21 connects to the Hebrew word Echie, Aleph Hei Yudhe, which is a name of Hashem connecting to the level of Bina. And Bina is also a connection to Teshuvah. We're now transferring to the PDF, Yearning for Redemption, by Rabbi Abraham Sutt. First verse, Lam Natseach Mizmor LeDavid. Lam Natseach, dedicated to the one who grants victory and forgiveness. Mizmor LeDavid is a cutting psalm by David. The second verse, Bebo Elav Natan Hanavio Kasher Ba El Bat Sheva. When the prophet Nathan came to him after he had come to Bathsheba, In another translation, it also says when he had come into Bathsheba. There are 9 words that's either going to connect to Hakma or to Yesod. My guess is Yesod, but let's count the letters. Twenty-nine letters represents Hakma, so my guess was wrong. As we know, the number 29 connects to the month of Av through the letters that created the month of Av and the constellation of Leo, Aryeh, the lion. I should make a commentary here that according to the Kabbalah, there was no sin in being with Bathsheba, even though she became pregnant, and it would appear that she was out of wedlock, because the before her husband, the Hittite, went to war, he gave her a conditional divorce, essentially saying that they were divorced while he was away at war. So she was an unmarried woman. And according to Jewish law, that is being intimate with someone in an unmarried condition is not a sin. That, of course, is very different than what the values of the Western world. The third verse, Haneni Elohim kechazdecha kerov rachamecha meche peshai. 7 words connecting to Zerantin and Malchut in unity. Be gracious with me, Elohim, O just God. In keeping with your loving kindness, with your great mercies, erase my crimes. The word crimes is Peshaai, the last word. And that is one of the 3 levels of sin. So it's really not a crime. It's a difficult translation. I'm not saying it's corrupted, because I trust Rabbi Sutton's translations more than others.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm wondering, would this be considered an example of, what did they call it, letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law?
To call it a crime? Or are you talking about the idea of adultery?
Right. Or the idea of her, you know, being a divorced woman or unmarried, let me put it that way.
No.
And going to war.
I don't see it as the difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law.
Okay.
I understand what took place in the process of the centuries and time and the development of the Catholic Church initially and then the Protestant churches. These values It's a different time. Biblical times are different than the development of the churches.
Right.
The values that people took and what the Western world developed as its moral values, which is based on the literal reading of the translations of the Bible, the translations are corrupt, and they don't understand the values of the times.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and the values of the times, the biblical morality, the Torah is not a book of morals and ethics, even though it's read that way. The Torah is a book of energy. It's explaining to us that the way energy works, the way creation works, the process of creation, it's not a book of morals and ethics. So this explanation that I just gave you, that why King David and Bathsheba were not at or did not commit a sin by being intimate with each other, this was the values of the time. But we live in a different time. We live in a society that says it's wrong, that it is a sin, and we have to evaluate the values for ourselves, the morals and ethics for ourselves. You know, I've had discussions this week with people trying to understand similar ideas, because if we look at the value of the terrorist culture, in their opinion, it's not wrong to kill themselves as long as they take out X number of additional people. Can I, sitting in the culture of the West, say that they're wrong? Based on the culture of the West, they're wrong. Based on their own culture, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Am I able to judge that culture? And as one person said, based on the relativity involved, there's nothing fixed, and that everything is up to each individual. And the answer to that is no, it's up to the society that you live in. It's up to the culture that you live in. They have established laws and regulations as prescribed in the Noahide laws. It's not up to us to judge another culture. It is up to us to defend ourselves from someone trying to kill us. So these are two different moralities. One's an individual, one's a group. Are they moralities? Are they really different? Each of us has to contemplate that for ourselves.
Well, it's another level of
question.
Well, yes, you did. It's just very early on. I said 25 years ago, we went to Chabad. It was our vacation, and we took the week to be able to go to those classes. And that was when I first learned about this. You know, I hadn't heard about this. Neither were in sin because of, let's call it, the bill of divorcement when you go to war. I haven't heard it taught since that time, but that was kind of the impression I got, was about that David was following the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law, and I've never heard it since, so that's why I ask you. But I think also with your explanation, it shows that it's a level of being able to reach unity within diversity. You know, it's another another level to contend with. So I'm going to go ahead and mute again. Thank you for your answer.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Martha.
My understanding is that once a person lays with a female or goes into a female, she becomes his wife at that point. Is that correct?
Under Jewish law, they are married, and that is correct.
It's not. Okay. So do they have to go through the marital ceremonies, or once they lay with that person, she becomes his wife?
I'm not an expert in this area. I'm not a posik, meaning a determination of law. But my understanding is that they do not need to go through the ceremony because the intimacy alone is the ceremony.
Right.
There is a difference between being married under a chuppah and having the seven blessings, which all are part of the ritual of a wedding, of a Jewish wedding. There is a difference, and there, if we speak in terms of a marriage being the gluing of the male and female souls together, that's a metaphor, but if we think of it in those terms, the glue is not as strong with a marriage that isn't under a chuppah.
Okay. Is it because of the additional blessings by being married under the chuppah that you take on more than the Noahide laws?
It's definitely related to that. Each religion has its own marital ritual, and those rituals may not have the same meanings that are attributable to a Jewish wedding ritual through the Kabbalah or through Jewish tradition and teachings, and the Torah teachings. But each of those has a large community that has the consciousness associated with those rituals and the meaning behind those rituals that they are taught in their religion. So all of that has energy. All of that impacts energy. You know, you have to evaluate. If you have one righteous person, is his consciousness, meaning his energy, equivalent to a number of people who are not righteous? Or is each individual human being equal to even a tzaddik? Because ultimately, every human being will become a tzaddik. And that's something for you to contemplate within your meditations.
No, thank you.
You're welcome. The fourth verse. Cherev gam seini me'aoni u'mechatati tahareini. Please note that there is a written word and a spoken word in the first word of this verse, and I'll discuss it in a moment. Cleanse me completely of my transgression. Purify me of my wrongdoing. Cherev has the meaning of cleanse. What's the difference between the spoken, which is cherev, and the written, which is hey, resh, bet, hey? It's the last hay. The last hay in a Hebrew word many times has the meaning of going in the direction of. Essentially, the Torah is saying with this difference that from our perspective, the saying, we're looking to be cleansed. But this cleansing, this level, requires the physical world to be cleansed, because the last hay represents the physical world, the Malchut. The fifth verse. Ki feshayani eda v'chatati nevi tamid. For I know and admit my crimes, my wrongdoing is ever before me. I therefore beseech you to forgive me. Of course, that last phrase is Rabbi Sutton telling us this is the intent of the words, but it's not, the words are not there. The idea that my wrongdoing is ever before me, this is part of the confessional. We need to confess verbally, out loud, in effect manifesting our thoughts that we have done something incorrect. If we don't manifest that thought, there can be no cleansing. There can be no teshuvah. Because we live in a physical world. And we have to, all aspects have to be in the physical world, except if we do not have time, so to speak, if we do not have the opportunity to manifest a thought, either with words or with actions in the physical world, then the thought can be cleansed through other ways, but that's essentially saying, as you die, in the process of your death, if you didn't have the opportunity to admit your wrongdoing, the thought of wrongdoing will be thought of, it will be assumed that you would have done so had you been given the opportunity. That's clearly Hashem's mercy in action. The sixth pasuk. Lecha levadcha kasatati v'chara v'enecha asiti l'man tizdak b'davrecha tizke b'shavtecha. With regard to Bathsheba, I have sinned against you alone. For I acted in haste, and thereby caused your name to be profaned. With regard to Uriah, I have done that which is evil in your eyes, such that you are justified in your sentence, equitable in your judgment. We need to discuss these two aspects a little bit more. King David is saying that Bathsheba was not a participant, that she did not do anything because I, as the king, she has no ability to say no. This is a whole discussion going on in the current climate of the quote-unquote Me Too generation. If there's a difference in power between the two participants, does the person of lesser power have the ability to say no? That's the question that's being debated and being changed from earlier times within this generation, in my opinion. That's what's been going on. King David is giving us this teaching right here when he's saying, I had the power. She could not either agree or disagree. And I acted in haste. I allowed my passion to rule me. And that was my mistake. Now, with respect to Uriah, when Uriah came home, King David told him to go into his wife. Why? Because he knew that she had become pregnant. And he was away. So it would be clear that there would be gossip. It would be clear that there would be inappropriate responses because people are people. So he's saying that what King David did was send a direction to the general in the field when Uriah did not go into his wife, because my brothers in the field cannot do that, have that comfort, so I won't have that comfort. And he slept outside of King David's quarters the whole night. So he disobeyed the orders of the king. That's grounds under Jewish law for a death sentence. And King David wrote to I don't remember if it was Joab or the other general, but he wrote and directed Uriah to be put into the front lines, which would imply that the danger was greatest, and that the people who are killed are more killed mostly in the front lines, and he was killed. And therefore, King David is saying, from a human perspective, my actions are evil in the eyes of Hashem. But we have Uriah, if he had not disobeyed the king, he would not have died, no matter where he was in the lines. Remember, under Kabbalah, no one dies without their time having been decreed by a spiritual court. So Uriah was destined to die for his action of disobeying the king. But King David did not have to be the one to say it. It would have happened anyway. And that's what's being described in this verse. From King David's perspective, he realized that he did not have to be the one to act. And that was the beginning of his teshuvah. But of course, it took the statements by Nathan the prophet for him to have these thoughts. And that is what we need to take back when we're reading the prophets, to realize that their statements are applying to us, to each one of us in our lives today. The seventh pasuk. Hein bavon holalti uvet het yehemad mi. Indeed, I was conceived in transgression. My father did not know he was with my mother, but thought he was with another woman. And in sin, my mother became pregnant with me. For she began menstruating before separating from my father. These are according to the Midrash, as we will learn. So we're going to read footnote 79. In Hebrew, 7 reads, Hen ba'avon kol chalalti ubechet yechem mat imi. We have translated this verse according to the Ari, and we'll see that below. According to Rabbi Hirsch from the 1800s, Indeed, I was born with the capacity to transgress, and my mother nursed me with a tendency to wrongdoing. Other commentaries, Sephorno and Malbim, indeed, I was born with a propensity to draw, propensity to transgress by virtue of the fact that a human being is born without a developed intellect, and therefore naturally is drawn to satisfy his physical needs and appetites, even when these contradict the dictates of intellect. In addition, I was conceived in sin, in the heat of my parents' sexual passion, which imbued me with a strong sexual desire as well. So you see three different ideas about intimacy being expressed within the writings of the Jewish world. And these three also relate to the history of the development of Jewish philosophy. According to the Ari, the two parts of this verse apply specifically to David, as to opposed to being statements of some kind of universal law, that every human being is born in sin. He thus relates the Midrash about Yishai, David's father, who after having seven sons, all of whom were righteous and upright, had doubts about his own Jewishness. After all, his grandmother Ruth was a Moabitess. Perhaps his grandfather Boaz had erred in his understanding of the verses. An Ammonite or Moabite male may not enter to become members of Hashem's congregation, even after the 10th generation. This is because they did not greet you with bread and water when you departed Mitzrayim. To be a Jew, one has to have the essence of chesed, of loving kindness, which is the main attribute of Abraham, the progenitor of the Jewish, of the children of Israel. So that's what this is discussing. There's also this idea that when a married couple comes together, at their moment of ejaculation, which hopefully both are achieving that orgasm at the same moment, at that moment, if their thoughts are on that pleasure, it's a sin. Because if their thoughts are they're receiving this pleasure in order to appreciate the creation that Hashem created, and that is their consciousness. That is the ultimate method to draw a higher soul child. And that's what righteous couples achieve. I'm not going to go into whether it's accept, you know, how difficult that is, because we all realize how difficult that is. But all of that is going into this discussion among the sages over the centuries. Boaz was the greatest sage of his generation. He reasoned that since the Torah itself provided a specific reason for this prohibition, that they did not greet you, and since women are exempt from going out to greet guests, the verse must refer only to the Ammonite and Moabite males. He thus married Ruth, the Moabitess. All his years, Yishai had accepted this line of reasoning. Now, however, in his old age, he began to have doubts. Perhaps my illustrious ancestor was wrong. Yishai therefore separated from his wife again, after she had borne 7 upright sons, and composed a special conditional ketubah to remarry his Canaanite maidservant. In essence, the ketubah stated, if I, Yishai, am Israelite, then this Canaanite maidservant is hereby freed and becomes Israelite. And if I am not Israelite, then we are married as non-Israelites. To everyone's consternation, the day was set for their marriage. In the meantime, this Canaanite maidservant loved her mistress very much. How can I marry him? She confided to her. He is your husband. They therefore concocted a plan when they would be alone, ready to consummate their marriage. She would rise up to douse the candle and bar the door. And instead of returning to bed, Yishai's wife would take her place. After all, they reasoned, he is an old tzaddik whose thoughts are bound on high at all times. He won't even notice. And so it was. And this, the Ari says, we can understand the first part of our verse. En be'avon cholati, I was conceived in or through a transgression. What was the transgression? When a man lies with his wife, it is forbidden for him to think of another woman, even if the second woman is also his wife. Yishai thought that he was lying with his maidservant, when in truth, it was his own beloved wife. Concerning the second half of the verse, Ubechet Yechemat Yechimatni Aimi, and in my sin my mother became pregnant with me, the Ari informs us that David's mother felt her menstrual period begin at the very end, while they were still locked in loving embrace. She whispered, I am Anita. And as the halakha states, they immediately separated. Nevertheless, David's mother unfortunately conceived him while in a state that is considered ritually unclean. The reason for all this, the Ari adds, was in order to free such an exalted soul from being trapped in the service of the system of evil. Another part of the story that goes back to Adam and before. In order to bring a great soul like David's into the world, Hashem has to deceive the system of evil. He did this by causing something to seem wrong, by giving the whole thing the appearance of sin. Yishai is thinking that he was with his second wife, and David's mother becoming ritually unclean was all that was needed. With this, the soul of the Mashiach entered the world. I think we have quite a bit to conceive and understand and contemplate in what is being said by Rabbi Sutton in these notes. I hope you agree. We're not going to be able to finish this because we've had so much discussion, but I think it's been beneficial. Let us read the 8th verse, which is probably where we will stop because there's another note. The 8th verse. Ein emet ha-patshta ba-sukhot u-satum ta-ach-ma-todini. Behold, you have always desired that a man serve you in truth and strive to internalize the truth in the innermost chamber of his being. I therefore ask that you make known to me the wisdom that you have hidden in the human heart, the wisdom that is needed to return into Teshuvah, to return to you with my whole being. Footnote 80. God so free. Behold, you are always desired that a man serve you in truth, and strive to internalize that truth in the innermost chambers of his being. Amod Chacham, I therefore ask that you make known to me the wisdom that you have hidden in the human heart, the wisdom that is needed to return in Teshuvah, to return to you with my whole being. Malbim, another commentator, behold, the truth that you desire that a man strive to internalize is covered over by a thick layer of physicality, and the wisdom which you make known to me is concealed in the depths of the soul. As a result of this, a man will almost surely stumble into sin. Hirsch, behold, your true desire has always been that which is covered over by the body, the powers of the soul. And it is through these intangible spiritual powers in me, these hidden energies, that you teach me to perceive the godly wisdom that is concealed in all things. Simple, but you have always desired that a man seek inner truth. Oh, teach my innermost heart wisdom. The eighth verse has seven words connecting to Zeran Pin and Malchut, the lower seven Sephirot. Letters connecting to the Lamed, the gematria of which is 30. Lamed means teaching or teacher. The reason I gave you the gematrias on this verse is because, in my opinion, these gematriot are helpful in absorbing this understanding of this verse and its relationship to Teshuvah, its relationship to recognizing what is the wisdom of the heart. We still have a few minutes, so I will do a few more verses. The ninth verse, Taha Deni Be'ezo, V'yed har hacha b'seini, u'mishelegalbin. I beseech you, illuminate my soul, assist me in overcoming my urges, refine me with hyssop and with the ashes of the red heifer, that I may be pure. Wash me so that I may become whiter than snow and closer to you than if I had ever erred. I'm going to take a minute and discuss the various aspects of water. Water in the liquid form, we know, represents loving kindness. But in a frozen state, there are two levels. One, the level of ice, which represents harsh judgment. But harsh judgment within a frame of loving kindness. And snow, which represents soft judgment. The world was created in judgment. But then, according to the Midrash, Hashem recognized that man could not survive strict judgment. Because according to strict judgment, and this is a metaphorical example, if someone steals, immediately the hand that did the stealing would fall off, because the hand is that that much responsible, even though the brain directed the hand. The hand still had free choice to stop. But what is the balance point? Within the frame of loving kindness, there is, even within the right column, there is a three columns. There is loving kindness of loving kindness, chesed of chesed. There is Givurah of Chesed, and there's Tiferet of Chesed. What is the balance point? The balance point is Tiferet, the central column. It consists of Givurah, judgment, accepting the binding of Isaac, accepting the control by the loving kindness. Ice, representing harsh judgment, has great difficulty accepting the binding. But soft judgment, snow, which most of the time, much of the time, depending on the temperature, of course, it will land on the earth and become water. It's closest to that balance point. The cause is judgment. The world was created in judgment. But the physical world needs to be controlled by loving kindness. And that balance point is snow, the softness, the gentleness that is built into snow. And that's why the highest form of a mikveh is called Gilgul HaShelech, rolling in the snow. And it's easy to describe after midnight, so that you have the energy of the chesed coming into the world. After midnight, one goes out to the newly fallen snow. Because if the snow has had a day or two to become ice, it's not harsh, it's not soft judgment anymore. It's newly fallen snow of at least a couple of feet. Because what you're going to do in the nude, so that obviously you don't want it to be where people can see you. But in the nude, you will stand in the snow and fall directly onto the snow and settle into that space your body creates. And then you roll, you turn over from your front to your back. And you do that 9 times, representing the 9 sephirot from Keter to Yesod. The rolling is front to back, front to back. So obviously when you're on your back, you have to roll back to your front. Some people will do that by standing up each time and falling into the same location. Others just turn over and do it in the sense of the rolling, which is what's recommended by the Ari. That technique cleanses all of the sexual impurities. It cleanses the sephirah of Yesod. Since we're almost out of time, and we're about halfway through, because we've done through the 11th or the 9th verse, so we will pick up on the 10th verse on Monday.
Hey, hello. This is Malka.
Go ahead, Malka. I was just about to ask three questions.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Is this going to be posted on the recordings? Because I got interrupted.
Yes, it will be posted. Usually not until this afternoon or over the Shabbat, after the Shabbat, but it will be posted, yes.
Okay, thank you. I just got some interruptions here, and I had to sign off for a bit.
I understand.
Not a problem. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? I bid you all Shabbat Shalom. Have a beautiful Shabbat, especially with this Shabbat, the splitting of your own limitations, Yom Suf. Shalom Gadol.
Thank you, Shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.